Imagine a new lifestyle where you can travel wherever and whenever you want and share your stories with the world. This is the Break Into Travel Writing podcast. Join Alexa Meisler as she interviews top bloggers, writers, photographers, and PR in the world of travel. Welcome to your journey into travel writing. Now, here's your host, Alexa.
Hello, travelers. Alexa here. Today's guest is an author, founder of a thriving travel website, and has a passion project that involves tasting and writing about every Napa Valley winery. Before we dive into his story and about how a life-changing trip to Nepal when he was in college began his travel writing career, I want to share a story about how I started my first travel website, 52 Perfect Days. I was living in Portland, Oregon at the time, and I was a contributing writer for Portland Family Magazine and PDX Magazine. I was also writing for Oregon.com and Spot Magazine on a regular basis, as well as a handful of other outlets on a less regular basis like Northwest Magazine and Healing Lifestyles and Spas. I was just beginning to shift my writing interest to primarily travel as a main focus, but none of my current outlets were interested in travel outside the Pacific Northwest, and most of my relationships with editors were for local publications and websites. After a handful of missed opportunities for press trips, either because I was accepted to the trip but didn't get an editor's letter of assignment in time, or the trips filled up before I got my letter of assignment, I was frustrated. It felt like a catch-22 because the time frame between applying and getting the letter of assignment was too short for me based on my current stable of outlets. I started to broaden my relationships with editors, and I'd say this was around 2006. The writing staff at many print publications was being downsized, and newspaper travel sections were going from 20 pages to 4 pages, or away completely. It was a bit of an odd time in travel writing and hard to break in because so many of the print travel writers were transitioning over to online. Now, I'm not a give-up kind of girl, and one night I had a brilliant idea. At least it seemed brilliant to me. I would become my own editor. If I wrote my own letter of assignment, I wouldn't miss any deadlines for press trips. All I needed was a website. Easy enough, right? Too bad CMS sites weren't around the way they are today, and even though WordPress was released in 2003, it wasn't the option it is now. I didn't let that stand in my way. My husband helped me build a site, and I won't get into the nightmare of updating that site, because the good news was, all of a sudden, I was not only a travel writer, but an editor. I even had business cards to prove it. I started applying for group and individual press trips, and got many of them. I had solved the issue. I was able to put out more content and build my travel writing resume. I'm not saying starting a website is the right decision for everyone, but based on timing, it worked great for me, and the site is still around. Our guest today started his website after a trip to Nepal sparked his passion for travel writing. I started my website because I didn't want my passion for travel writing to be limited by a yes or no from another editor. So my question to all of you is, what are you willing to do to start your travel writing career or take it to the next level? Tweet me at Write to Travel, that's WriteToTravel, and let me know. Today's guest experienced a life-changing trip to Nepal where he trekked near the Everest Base Camp. This was his first trip to a part of the world that wasn't Western-centric, and the authentic experiences, culture, food, beauty, and one of the world's greatest mountains changed his life and bit him big time with the travel bug. His love of writing and photography and newfound love for travel were combined in 1996 to create his travel website, Dave's Travel Corner. It was the notes from the trip to Nepal that became the basis for his website. Today, his website is one of the premier resources for international travel. In 2006, he launched the Napa Wine Project with the goal to visit, taste, and write about every winery in Napa Valley. He has now completed more than 760 visits. He is the author of Freeways of Los Angeles and the founder of Dave's Travel Corner. He can be found on Twitter at DaveDTC.
Please welcome Dave Thompson.
Thank you for having me, Alexa.
Awesome to have you. I'm really excited to hear about your whole story, and I'd love to just start with your experience in Nepal.
Sure. I saw a flyer at my college with mountains on it and advertising a trip to Nepal sponsored by the university. And I was just walking through the student union one day, and I happened to see that in the window. And I said, hey, that looks really cool. I've never really done anything that far away from home before. And we'd have the guidance of the college behind us, and it seemed to be well organized. And so we were all lumped together. We all flew out of LAX and started trekking, like, almost as soon as we got there. And I had never been at altitude before, so I had no idea how my body would adjust. And we were all students, and a lot of us had not trekked before. And so we got up to 16, 17,000 feet, and I started becoming very weak. There was a food poisoning issue, and there was also altitude sickness combined, so it wasn't a good thing. And long story made short, I ended up being carried down on the back of a lady's back who was with us, one of our team, and she was also feeling effects from altitude. Our guide initially took me down at midnight and brought me into a hut about 1,500 feet below, and then he left me there with the lady I was with. And it wasn't fun. I threw up all night. It was so cold inside the hut that everything was frozen solid by the morning. And then that morning I was so physically weak I could not walk. And she would put me on her back, carry me down the mountain all day. We both had backpacks, so she'd have to come back for the backpacks, drop me off, go back down past where she dropped me off. And it was something that sticks with you for quite a while, an experience like that, where you have that hardship and you're just relying on someone else to get you down and get you back alive.
That is an extremely intense story. And was that your first trip out of the country?
That was my first big trip. I had been to Canada with my family, which was a fairly easy trip. And I'd also been to Costa Rica, just a real short trip, more of an educational trip. So I had not been exposed to mountains of that altitude and that non-Western culture that is in Nepal.
And still it was the impetus for you to really launch what would then be a career in travel for you. And so what was it about the experience? What were the positives about it that really kind of got you thinking about that?
And it's a trip that stuck with me for at least a year afterwards. It was something that I just thought about almost every day as far as the experiences and the new friends that I had made. And just as a team, when you come together like that and you experience hardships with other people and they see you, how you react and you see how they react, it's just something that brings you closer to people. I had always enjoyed writing, and so this was the perfect trip to start writing and combine that newfound love of travel with my interest in writing and my enjoyment of writing. And I missed part of that question, so I hope I answered that.
Oh, no, definitely.
Okay.
I was just asking what the positives were from that experience. That opened up this pathway for you to be in the world of travel.
Sure. And definitely part of that was the positives were the relationships that I made with people that I'm still in touch with today. 18 years later, I guess. And just following something that was intriguing to me, a trip that opened my eyes to different cuisine and different culture and different religion. And of course the mountains are amazing in that part of the world. So just dwelling on that and reflecting on that, and then combining my interest in writing and, which I did take wrote in a physical journal during the trip as well. So it was the impetus for starting my site online. And I had friends in the online world who were just starting a little internet service provider in 1996, and so it was a good opportunity to use them for the technical side and put this website somewhere.
Yeah, and you've been around for quite a while. I'm really interested in knowing some of your secrets, how you grew the site, and I know obviously being an early adopter always helps, but it still takes making the right decisions to have a long-standing business.
Yeah, and a lot of the decisions were not right in the beginning and sort of handicapped me as far as what platform. I mean, there wasn't WordPress back then, and there wasn't these really easy-to-use content management systems that there are today. The internet was still young in that regard. So a lot of the technical decisions were mistakes or learned by doing at the time. And programs like Front Page just were easy to use, but just not really good for the long run building a site. And yes, you mentioned early adopter. That is certainly very helpful. And then, of course, the persistence and the continuous addition of content and building the site and working on it whenever I was free. It wasn't full time back then. I had another job, and I still do that same job part time. But the travel site has certainly taken over and become more of a full time job. So it's persistence.
And I know you consider yourself both a writer and photographer. What came first for you?
The writing, definitely. I started writing in, maybe 8th or 9th grade. And I was writing poetry and just writing short stories and just more for myself, just as a creative outlet. And it was something that I felt, it was something I enjoyed doing, so I kept doing it. And then the photography did not come until after I started putting myself in places where I could take good pictures and just learn on the road as far as taking photography and just being in the right areas certainly helps. And then I took a photography class as well.
Nice. And what kind of camera do you use?
I have a 5D Mark III now, which has been a long time coming. And I got that because of the quality of images as well as it does really nice video. I started, I think, with a Canon 40D or something, 50D. Even before digital. I had an SLR is what I started with when it was film at the time. And then the camera, my quality of cameras has improved as I've run the site. You need good photography. You need a good camera. You need a good eye. Of course, it all ties together.
More and more, right? Photography just seems to become more and more important.
That's true. Absolutely.
And do you have a main focus for the site? For anyone who may not have bounced onto your site yet, share with us a little bit about the type of content you focus on.
I focus on content that brings you in the moment, that focuses on activities and experiences and unique experiences in many cases. So I have my own content, and I can focus on that. And then I have a lot of contributors as well, and their content certainly varies in what they do. But it focuses on destinations and what to do and where to go and what to see and unique activities and experiences in those destinations. But that's the content. And there's journals from contributors. There's my own blog. There's photography, a bunch of galleries from around the world. There's video. I do interviews with those in the lifestyle and travel industry. So it's a little mix of everything, and it's a lot of content, actually.
It's a lot of content, I know. Do you have any idea how many pages you have on that site?
I've got over 1,000 contributions, so individual piece from contributors, and then I've got all my own blog posts. I've got press releases, videos. It's around 5,000, somewhere in that range.
That's impressive.
It doesn't happen overnight, and it's something that you've just got to stick with to build it. That's right.
So I'd love to hear a little bit about the Napa Wine Project, and I'm just sitting here wondering why I never thought of that. I mean, what a fun side project.
I don't know. It's crazy. I never thought I'd get so involved because that's a whole nother life just working on that project. I chose Napa. I decided to start writing about wine after a friend from high school got me into wine, and she's always been into wine, and she toured me around the valley. Now I tour around for obvious reasons, but I didn't realize there were so many wineries and producers in Napa when I started this. It was just a fun little project, walk into tasting rooms, write about the wine, write about the experience for people, and then I realized Napa has way more wineries and producers that are not open to the public, that are private, that are in the hillsides. And so I said, okay, I'll start reaching out to these producers and try to review them. And so it's just sort of snowballed, and it's just something I continuously work on and update. And it's hard to believe, but there's over 1,000 unique wineries and producers in Napa Valley. And by that, I mean unique winery is a physical winery that has a bond from the government. And then there's also what we call virtual producers. These are wineries that do not have a physical location and more often than not buy the grapes from someone else who has their own vineyard. So they don't own the vineyard as well. So there's different levels of how you get into the wine industry. And I'm just, my mission is to promote Napa Valley from a personal perspective, from someone who's actually physically visited, tasted, and met with a representative from each of these wineries and written a review and taken photography if that's part of the review. So it's become a resource for consumers and trade and anyone really interested in Napa Valley.
Well, and what a great lesson, I think, for anyone, especially who would want to break into travel, food, photography. If you pick a niche like that, you can become an expert at that specific niche pretty quickly, I would think.
Yeah, it does. And that is a very good point. I think within a year I had a pretty good grasp of Napa Valley, and you have to continue to learn and educate yourself. And the wine industry is always changing, and the wineries in Napa, there's some closing. There's always new ones coming in. So it's a lifelong educational project. You never can stop learning with a project like this. And I should also mention to your listeners that it's a project I started not to make any money. It's a passion project. It's something I love. But it, along the way, it has opened up other doors for me in the wine industry. So I've gotten involved with a little company that they built the system to do winery reservations. It's like OpenTable. And I've licensed to do tours in Napa Valley. So it's just given me a unique perspective that way. And I've gotten to work with a few groups internationally and taken some trips internationally because of this. So the project itself to date doesn't make any money. And it has been a lot of work, and it's an intense project, but I get good traffic to the website. And I think at some point I probably could monetize it if I decide, but that hasn't been the focus to monetize it.
Right. That's a whole nother world, right?
It is. Yeah. And there's ways. Yeah, exactly. If you have traffic, you can certainly do things to monetize it. And with wine in particular, you could sell wine. You could take reservations. There's other things you can do.
Yes. And so tour guide is not something I actually knew that you did.
Yeah. I keep that fairly under the radar because I do travel a lot. And so it's something that I don't want to get too busy doing, but I like doing it. And so it's because of the industry, it's usually September and October, because that's the busy time of the year when during harvest and crush and everything's happening in the wineries. It's just a busier time in Napa and in the wine industry and this hemisphere in particular.
Well, and now onto a completely different project of yours, which was a book you wrote called The Freeways of Los Angeles. What was the inspiration for that? I'm totally fascinated.
It's a really odd topic to put into a book. And the reason I put it into a book format was it has become, and it is still, the most popular page on my travel website. It's more popular than my main page of my site by far. And I've always been attracted to transportation systems and how people get around. And Los Angeles is the land of the car. And there's so many actually automobile museums in Los Angeles, probably more than in a city that size. And I just started driving these freeways, and I was just fascinated by the toll lanes and some of the original freeways in the state of California in Los Angeles, and the five level overpass interchanges. I mean, you got five levels of freeways stacked up, and some of the history of the freeways and how it ties into pop culture and music. And I mean, if you live in Los Angeles, and I spend a lot of time there, you can't escape the traffic in the freeways. I mean, there is a metro, and it's becoming better developed. But freeways.
Yeah, it's nearly impossible.
Yeah, there's certain sections of town you can definitely get to and from with the metro. But it's growing. But so that was the reason. It was the traffic on my website, and I decided to put in an ebook and a paper book as well. And at some point, I've been approached to actually take that to the next level for another book. With more photography as the emphasis and just a little more in depth. So that might happen at some point.
Well, you'll have to keep us abreast of that. And so is the best way to find the book on Amazon at the moment or through your website?
Yeah, Amazon's fine. Or I keep a more, even more updated on my site under my Los Angeles, under the guides. And in Los Angeles, there's a page that's the freeway page. And when I discover anything new, since I'm always driving them, I always update that as well.
So with each podcast, my goal is to provide the listeners with practical advice about breaking into travel writing or taking that next step into travel writing. You're wearing a few hats, which is great for our listeners. You are both a travel writer and photographer, as well as the editor and founder of Dave's Travel Corner. So as the writer-photographer, I'd like to ask a few questions.
Sure.
Did you do any travel writing or photography before you started your website?
Actually, no. All the photography was initially put on my website. And at the time, in 96 through 99, it was what we call a subdomain. So it was a – Dave's Travel Corner was a website hosted off of another domain name website.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was – yeah, that site no longer exists. But yeah, in 1999, I registered the domain name and then moved everything over to the full domain name.
So coming from your point of view today, what would your advice be to somebody first breaking in? Not everyone can start a website to put their writing and photography out there.
That's right. Yeah, and it depends which direction you want to go to. I mean, I think it's harder if you're just going to place your writing on your own website and try to build income and a brand that way versus reaching out to established outlets and writing that way. And I did not do the latter there. I just have focused my career on building my own website, and that's been where the focus of the writing has been going. So I think in light of the thousands and thousands of domainname.com English-written travel blogs, I think it would make more sense to reach out to outlets and establish a relationship that way first and place your writing in other outlets and prove yourself that way. I think it's a harder thing these days to prove yourself with just one single website, your own website.
So speaking of that, do you belong to or suggest any travel writing or photography organizations where people can connect with other writers?
Yeah, I'm a member of the North American Travel Journalists Association, or NATCHA for short, also the International Food, Wine, and Travel Writers Association, which tends to be a little bit older as far as membership. But there's so many out there. I mean, it depends what your focus is. There's the Professional Travel Bloggers Association, PTBA, which is growing. There's all these conferences you can go to, like TBEX and Travel Massive. The most important thing for me is to network in person when it comes to any of this stuff. And you get out what you put in. And it's the in-person networking, it's those relationships that are absolutely the most important in this field, just like it is in the wine industry, just like it is, I think, in any industry.
And how do you get into those situations where you're networking in person?
You can start at just something as basic as a Travel Massive event. It's they're in cities all over the country. They're usually in larger cities, and they're meetups. And the organization provides the framework for those putting on these meetups in each city. And it's where you can meet other travelers, serious travel writers, people who are into travel. So just something basic as that. But then you can certainly – there's membership-based organizations where you pay the fee and you join that organization of travelers and writers and photographers and go to some of their events and make the connections that way. And social media is, of course, good. That's a whole other topic. I find a lot of the interaction with social media is fleeting. So that's why in-person – is just the strongest, of course.
We're getting back to in person. Isn't that nice?
yes.
So I'm sure you've been on plenty of fam trips. Do you have any advice for getting your foot in the door and getting that first trip?
Yeah, my first fam trip was to New Orleans.
Nice. That's a good way to start.
A long time ago, yeah. And I think because I am established now, and I actually have gotten to the point where I've cut back on personally going on fam trips. I still go on a few, but I send a lot of my writers on fam trips. And I think once you go on the first few, word spreads around as long as you deliver in a timely manner and you promote and you're in agreement of as producing what they're looking for, what the destination is looking for, the brand. That helps, and that certainly gets your name out there. And even reaching out, I mean, if they're not reaching out to you, reach out to them. If you're in a destination, a lot of these destination websites have sections for fam trips, or they create custom fam trips as well. So it's something that doesn't happen overnight, and it takes a long time, I think, to you get on the list of the destinations, and they talk with one another, and you certainly meet them at travel meetups as well.
That's true. Another good point. Another good reason to get out and meet people in person. And so wearing your editor website founder hat, I imagine many of our listeners would love to know if you are still accepting submissions. I know you mentioned you have writers. Do you still accept submissions?
Yes, and that's been a critical part of growing the content of our website and growing the brand and getting our name out there. So absolutely. And about, what's it been, 4 or 5 years ago, my tech guy and I, we built, mostly him with my input, built a very robust back-end system that can very cleanly and easily handle user submissions. So you create an account, you set your picture, you set your profile, you set your social media accounts, and then you can, it gives you a very easy-to-use form to submit both photography and the actual writing part of the post. So yes, absolutely we are.
And do you accept everyone who sends in a submission, or is there a process for getting approved?
Yeah, good question. We have submission guidelines, and there's a link on my site under the journals that talks about that part of it. We accept most, and we do have to edit some. We're more of a platform for writers who want exposure, and then we also have established writers. And I have go-to writers that I look at for sending on trips when they are offered to me as well. But yeah, we do have standards and definitely submission guidelines.
So is there a pay scale?
Yeah, as far as taking submissions, we don't pay for submissions, but you can certainly submit free. And we're okay with duplicate content as long as it's not spammy content. And Google guidelines are, from what I understand and have read on their site, they're okay with that as well. So I have no problem with the duplicate content if it's already published somewhere. The way I look at it, it's just additional exposure and an outlet for you and or for anyone interested in promoting their content online. And we do promote via our social media outlets as well once a piece is submitted.
Well, and it's so important. It's such a great way to just get those first clips and be able to start that resume and say, hey, I've got an outlet. So a story comes up.
That's right. And
you've got a place.
Yeah, and a number of writers have done that, have used our site for that.
And let's say you've got a writer who's writing a piece for you once a week or once a month. What is your favorite way a writer can help push out their own content from your site?
I see any piece that comes in, but promote via their social media outlets and any outlets they have. Maybe a mention on their own website that it's been posted, and then we promote via our own social media outlets. So it's – I think I lost track of half that question.
No, you're good. You're good.
Okay.
So are you finding any certain platforms are working better than others in social media right now?
Very good question. Wow. Yeah, it's what you put in is what you get out, and it's a time thing. I've always been attracted to Twitter. I like the fact that you can just post something quickly and it goes through and scroll through it and it's just easy to communicate with people really quickly and short and easy. And I mean, I spent a lot of time on that platform building up followership and promotion. So that's worked well for me. Facebook, I have minimal, I don't know, return, I guess. Google Plus, I'm seeing a little bit more return on. And I always use StumbleUpon and Quora. Quora is nice. It's not as well known, but you can choose what topics you want to post a piece in, and it'll selectively put it under, like, Napa Valley, and there's 5,000 followers following Napa Valley, so when you post something there, it'll show up on their radar. But I try to use as many as I can just because you don't know where people are finding you.
Absolutely true. Although I'm on the same page with you, Twitter's probably my favorite platform. And then as far as views, I think StumbleUpon still works.
Yes,
wonderfully.
Yeah, it does. And I continue to see that showing good traffic each month.
Yeah. So anything in particular a writer for your site has done that's impressed you, whether it was before, during, or after a piece was published?
Well, when they go on press trips, I'm always impressed when they get me the content within, like, a couple of weeks. And that's really nice. And that looks really good to the destination who hosted that trip as well. And then I also like the fact when writers who are on Twitter can either send me photographs from the trip and then I'll tweet or I'll retweet. I try to echo anything that they do social media during during the trip. So I do like that, and I think that's an important component. It's interesting. Some of the destinations don't seem to care at all still about social media, and especially some of the international ones. They're more focused on the content on my site. So it depends. It all depends on what the trip is.
And as far as advice for pitching, so you, a new writer approaches you, is interested in writing, and I know you've got your guidelines, but any advice for the first connection with you or any other publication?
Sure. I think if they're really new, I mean, it's good to bring in some other writing and just list some other outlets that you've published on as well. But I mean, that's certainly not the end all. I'm happy to work with new writers and promote pieces. But some experience, I mean, it's just some passion, bring some passion to the table, show that you're interested in this. And this is something you're set on doing. And maybe bring some other examples of your writing to the table as well. But we do edit and we will do that if we need to.
Does that take up a bit of time? Are you the editor?
Yeah,
somebody on staff?
I do the editing for the most part. The technical side, I have someone who's on staff and does all that, so I don't have to worry about that. But the editing, yes, I do a lot of that. And it all depends. Pieces can get pushed back as far as being posted right away if I'm really busy. And then there's certain writers that you just develop a relationship with. You know their writing is true and it's going to be grammatically correct, and there's not going to be a lot of editing that you have to do. And that just makes it so much easier. I mean, it's just the same thing. When I started writing, I was not a journalism major. I was a biology major. So I understand if someone's writing, they don't have that background. And I look at my writing 15 years ago and I say, wow, it's so much better now. It's just like, the more you write, and have someone edit it just to give you that perspective helps.
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, and that's a really good point when you're first starting out. If you don't already belong to a writing group, whether it's through a Facebook group or some other group that you found online, pass it by somebody that you know knows the English language well.
Yes.
Because if you give it to the editor with at least one proof on it, it's going to help dramatically.
That's a very good point. Yeah, just do a little layer in between the editor.
And I'm sure the writers that require the least amount of editing probably rise to the top as far as being sent on press trips.
Yes. And they're usually the serious writers, and they establish a relationship with me. And the other thing I should really quickly mention about press trips is I've met a number of these writers on press trips, and they've become friends and they've become contributors. So that's an important outlet for that. And I don't have that as much as I've given away trips to other writers. I just don't get that. But when I go in person and I just talk up the site and just meet people in person, and especially some of the retired from other careers in journalism or freelancing now, they like the outlet that I have, and they certainly promote content with me.
So getting back to you for a minute, where haven't you been, and what is the destination top on your list?
Antarctica, I'd love to go to. It's the last, continent I have not been to yet, and it's very expensive to get to, from what I understand. I've been to most of the other regions of the world. Mongolia is up there on the list. Anything with mountains. Oh, Venezuela for sure I have not yet been to, and I want to see Angel Falls. And so that would be a neat trip at some point. And then Caribbean, I still have a number of islands to visit as far as probably my least visited part of the world. But so those are just a couple.
And as far as, for you, the definition between a vacation and travel, what would that be for you?
For me, I get one vacation a year. And that's with my wife to Thailand, where we just sit in hammocks and drink spy wine coolers and hang out with her family and cook and eat and just generally relax. That's a vacation for me. Everything else is work. And it involves a lot of travel, and it's a lifestyle, but I'm always writing and I'm social media and promoting, and it's work, but it's a lifestyle. So it ties in. I mean, there's certain enjoyment, of course, to that. So those are the big differences for me. I think I hopefully answered that.
Definitely. So before we close, do you have any other advice you'd like to give somebody who wants to break into travel writing or photography?
Yeah, do a lot of it. Do a lot of writing and pass your writing by people who can edit it and who can give you feedback on it. And you don't need the most expensive camera in the world. You need good lens. You need a decent camera. You need a good eye. But even more importantly, join some of these organizations that focus on promoting travelers and writers and photographers, whether it's going to an event like TBEX or going. I'm involved in a little group in Los Angeles called LACOT, the Los Angeles Area Consortium of Online Travel Writers. We meet every once in a while, and it's a great place. Things like that, or Travel Massive, things like that where you can network and meet some of the destinations who are representative of some of these trade shows as well. So, and it's you need to have a – that's the other thing I should mention. You need to have a resume before you can get into some of these travel trade shows. Just for example, like VMEX is the Visit Europe Media Exchange. They don't select everyone because they're limited on space and budget and how many destinations are there and how much time. Or the Canada Media Marketplace, or there's one for the United States as well. So you will have to have a resume for some of those, but start with the networking and some of these organizations you can join without having to have that extensive resume.
Great advice, and I appreciate all the insight that you've given. And before we go, please share with our listeners, what is the best way to connect with you?
I love Twitter. I'm on Twitter all the time. So my account handle is Dave and then DTC, which are the initials for Dave's Travel Corner. So one word, Dave DTC. And then, of course, my website is davestravelcorner.com, and my Napa site is napawineproject.com.
Dave, I had a blast talking with you today. I appreciate all the awesome information, and I'm sure you've got the listeners. Hopefully they were taking notes, because there was a lot here, or they're going to be able to listen twice.
Yeah, next time we'll have to take some callers. 40 minutes went by, really fast.
Doesn't it? Or, you know, I could do probably a whole show with you just on social media, I think.
Yeah, or wine or whatever.
Ooh, wine. Let's do that next.
Yes, and you're in Seattle or?
I'm in San Diego.
Oh, you're in San Diego. Oh, you're South. Oh, okay, awesome. Yeah, yeah. Well, and you've got Temecula and you've got, there's other, you've got closer than us. But when you're up in Napa, let me know.
Oh, definitely. Well, I appreciate everything. Hope you have an awesome day. And we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Alexa.
Thank you for listening, and a big thank you to David for sharing his story with me today. Don't forget the question of the day. What are you willing to do to start your travel writing career or take it to the next level? Tweet me at WriteToTravel, that's WriteToTravel, and let me know. Until next time.